Your findings are accurate. How could they not know this? Kaelin asked. Empirical evidence would suggest that the Boxans already do know these facts and have not acted on this knowledge, the AI said. Kaelin pressed her lips together in thought. Could an entire species be in denial about their situation? I can't believe they would simply ignore this problem. Do you know if they've tried to find another colony world? Kaelin asked. I tried looking on the systems we have access to, but if they're looking, they're not devoting a lot of resources to it, Emma said. Perhaps they have a way to extend their time here on Alaron? Emma shook her head. Unlikely, because this planet isn't mineral-rich like Earth. It's only capable of sustaining limited forests and tundra, but even the oceans aren't teeming with life. If it were as simple as bringing water to this planet, that would be one thing. But the low mineral content of the soil suggests this world has already been depleted. It also doesn't have a moon, so no tides. The moon and the tides back on Earth are essential for life to flourish. Kaelin studied the data on screen. The Boxans weren't just losing a war with the Zaijins. They were in danger of going extinct forever if they didn't find a place to live. They're stuck in this rigid cycle, Kaelin said. Emma nodded. And that's why we need to be careful, I think. Why is that? They've had to make really tough decisions. So many that I can't even imagine how they've managed to keep it together as long as they have. But when a society gets into this cycle of surviving and only surviving, they see everything as a tough choice that requires sacrifice. It becomes almost instinctual. I don't think all the Boxans feel this way, but this perception is certainly shared by many of them, Emma said. Well, they've lost a lot. They have. But they might lose even more if they don't deal with this problem now. They need to find a permanent home, Emma said. I want to talk to Majasalax about this and see what she thinks. It could be that the Mardoxian sect is trying to steer the High Council in this direction, Kaelin said. They do seem to be at the heart of many things.
The rest of what Emma said suddenly became muffled in Kaelin's ears as she closed her eyes to a flash of light and heard the distinct sounds of a blaster being fired.
Kaelin, are you all right?
Emma asked while shaking Kaelin's shoulders. Kaelin opened her eyes.
I'm all right.
Emma frowned.
Maybe I should call Brenda.
Kaelin shook her head.
No, it's nothing. I'm fine. Just a bit tired, I think. I've had some strange dreams lately.
Emma looked at her for a long moment.
What have you been dreaming about?
Kaelin told her about the Boxan in the red power armor and being on a battlefield.
I'm not surprised you've got Boxans on the brain. We all do. But are you sure this isn't your ability rather than a dream? I'm not sure,
Kaelin admitted.
Maybe you should try and use a Mardoxian chamber to see if that gives you a stronger vision. If nothing happens, you'll know it was just a dream,
Emma said. Kaelin smiled.
That's a good idea. I think I'll give that a try.
Chapter 6 Kaelin and Zack spent the night alone aboard the Athena and were eating breakfast in the mess hall.
You know, we have this ship that we could use to just fly right out of here, Zack said.
Kaelin shook her head.
Or take the shuttle and find some remote part of Alaron that the Boxans haven't been to yet, Zack said.
I need to get back down to the surface, Kaelin said.
Let me guess. Majasalax.
Yes, I do need to see her. It's about what Emma told me yesterday.
Zack nodded.
I get it. Well, I don't really get it. Why would anyone stay somewhere that wasn't going to keep them alive? That doesn't make any sense to me, but... You know what? It does make sense to me, he said, his eyes lighting up.
Really?
Kaelin said, unconvinced. Yes, really. When my mom left us, my dad and I couldn't stay in our house. We couldn't afford it anymore. The one thing my dad insisted on keeping was a 1968 Dodge Charger. It was a beautiful car. God, I miss that thing. We'd work on it on weekends and stuff. But what I didn't know at the time was that it was worth a fortune. He could have sold it and made a lot of money, but he didn't. It was like this was the one thing he could hold on to. It was almost like he would lose his identity if he sold that car. He held on to it even when it didn't make sense to keep it any longer, but it was his. I'm wondering if there are some similarities with the way the Boxans feel about Alaron,
as a way of holding on to their identity, Zack said.
Kaelin eyed him for a moment.
You're equating an entire species' determination to stay on a planet they can't survive on with your dad's car?
Zack nodded with a smile. Yes, I am. This was a colony world. They already lost their home planet. There's only so much loss a person can take before they throw in the towel and just hold on or let go.
As the seconds went by, Kaelin found that Zack was making a lot of sense. His dark, penetrating eyes regarded her, and he saw her finally get his point. Sometimes she wondered what Zack would do if he had the Mardoxian trait like she did. He already had the uncanny ability to see right to the heart of any matter and put it in simplified terms that anyone could understand. It was something she admired in him.
"Whatever happened to the car?" Kaelin asked.
Zack's ears turned red.
"I had to sell it when he died."
Kaelin stroked his forearm.
"That's not your fault."
"I didn't even think about it, about how much that car meant to him. I was actually happy that it sold because it paid a lot of bills. But still, I should have."
Kaelin pulled him into her arms.
"You were so young. I remember what it did to you. How could you have known? We should try and find the car when we get back."
Zack frowned.
"Are you serious? The car's gone. Who knows where it could be?"
Kaelin rolled her eyes.
"You managed to decode an alien signal, but a car with a VIN number is beyond you. Don't be an idiot. We'll find that car when we get back home."
Zack sighed heavily.
"Why is this so important to you?"
"Because it's important to you, dummy,"
Kaelin said.
"Do you have any idea what it will cost? It's a collector's item."
He stopped himself and then shook his head.
"No," he said, and stepped away from her. "I don't need charity."
Kaelin shook her head.
"We're going to argue about this here, now."
Zack stepped back from her and put his hands on his hips.
"Your family has enough money to rival small countries. I get it."
Kaelin crossed her arms and narrowed her gaze at him.
"I don't know how you can go from brilliant to idiotic in seconds. Yes, my family is wealthy and I have a huge trust fund. I'm not going to apologize for that. If you want to be with me, then you'll need to come to terms with it, you jerk. How dare you accuse me of making you a charity case?"
she said, stalking toward him.
Zack backed away, bringing his hands in front of his chest in a placating gesture.
"I'm with you because I love you, even when you do this. I don't need to buy your dad's old car for you because you'll be able to do it yourself. You're a damn hero, Zack. Whether you want to admit it or not, you saved Earth from the Zygian fleet."
"It was all of us," Zack said.
"We were all there and we contributed, but it was you who uploaded the command to the Star Shroud. It was you who had the insight to apply what we found at the Drar space station and gave the people back home a fighting chance to live. And I'll make sure they all know it was you,"
Kaelin said. She'd gotten so close to him that she brushed against his chest.
"God, you're scary when you're mad." "And I'm strangely turned on right now," Zack said.
Kaelin punched him in the stomach.
Zack coughed and laughed at the same time. "All right, I'm sorry. I'm an idiot. I can't be brilliant all the time. Do you have any idea how hard that is?"
Kaelin cracked a smile, and the rest of her ire drained away. Kissing him goodbye, she headed toward the shuttle. A short while later, Kaelin landed the Athena's shuttle on the landing pad where Efren and Katie met her. After a quick meeting, Efren went straight aboard the shuttle, but Katie lingered for a moment.
"How's he doing?"
Katie asked.
"Bearing himself in his work," Kaelin said.
Katie had long since gotten over her fling with Zack, but they were still friends. Kaelin had noticed that Katie was spending quite a bit of time with Efren, so maybe there was something there. They all took whatever comfort they could find in each other.
"I'll check on him later,"
Katie promised, and Kaelin thanked her. Kaelin took a transit pad to the Mardoxian complex. She had Emma's data analysis on Oleron in case she needed it, but she didn't think she would. There was no way anyone in the Mardoxian sect would have missed this. The question that remained was why no one was doing anything about it. The transit pad brought her down in the middle of the Mardoxian complex. Boxons preferred a dome-shaped architecture, and Majasalax had told her that the dome shapes were efficient, but on Sethion there were vast cities. Kaelin had spent a little bit of time learning Boxan history, and they'd come from an incredibly lush and fertile world. Sethion was larger than Earth, but not by much.
Most of the planet was forested, and the forests were brought into the vast cities. The pictures she'd seen were amazing, and she wished she could have witnessed it in person. Kaelin accessed the info terminal to find Majasilax's location and then probed with her senses to see if she was actually there. She was, but she wasn't alone. Majasilax was with Hodak, the head of the Mardoxian sect. Kaelin swallowed hard. If she wanted answers, his were probably the best she was going to get. Kaelin walked through the building. The hallways were sparse, with most buildings designed for necessity rather than comfort or history, and there weren't very many boxins at the Mardoxian complex at any given time. Majasilax had told her that they were purposefully spread apart to keep the actual numbers of boxins with the Mardoxian trait a secret. All boxins had some level of the Mardoxian trait, but not all of them were adept at it like Majasilax. Kaelin suspected that the same would apply to humans. She knew Dux Corp had a recruitment protocol for the program that followed Stargate, but she had no idea what it was. She also had no idea how she stacked up against the other members of that secret organization, but Majasilax insisted that Kaelin was gifted even by Boxen standards. Outside the door she needed to go through was a heavily armed Boxen soldier. He must have been Hodak's bodyguard. All Mardoxian priests had them. Majasilax's guard had died protecting her when she was captured by the Zygins. She should have been assigned another bodyguard, but hadn't, and it was also unclear why Majasilax's old bodyguard hadn't carried out his duty to end her life rather than risk a Mardoxian priestess being captured by the Zygins.
"They're expecting you, Commander,"
the boxin guarding the door said. The door opened, and Kaelin walked through. The room beyond was much like the resonance chambers the boxins built on their starships. The resonance chamber was an artificial garden filled with plants that were native to Sethion. Those plants would never survive in Alaron's dry atmosphere.
"Welcome, Kaelin," Hodak said.
The two boxins knelt on the ground, facing one another. The door closed behind her, and Kaelin continued toward them and knelt down, sitting on her feet.
"Thank you," she said.
"Majasilax tells me that your progress through our training regimen has been exponential. I'm very happy to hear this, and you should be proud of your accomplishment,"
Hodak said.
"Thank you," Kaelin said. "I'd like to discuss something with both of you."
Majasilax's large ears twitched, and her long braids shifted.
"What is it you wish to discuss?" she asked. "Emma Roberson is a foremost expert in multiple fields of biology. She's been running some analyses on Alaron and has come to realize that its viability as a long-term home world for the Boxins may not be possible. I have her data, but neither of us can imagine that this is something you're unaware of," Kaelin said.
Majasilax exchanged glances with Hodak, who gave a slight nod.
"You are, of course, correct. Alaron is merely a resting place while we regroup," Majasilax said. "Have you located any other worlds you can migrate to?" Kaelin asked.
"I can say we're aware of the situation, but have prioritized stopping the Zygins rather than finding another world to migrate to,"
Hodak said.
"Why wouldn't you look for a new home? Could you return to Sethion?"
Kaelin asked. Hodak's body went rigid.
"Sethion is beyond our reach. To return there would condemn our species to death. There's a reason the star system is under quarantine. Also, with the Zygins in control of the Confederation, we couldn't stand against the combined forces of the Confederation."
"I know your war is with the Zygins, but at some point you'll need to defend yourself, even from those species that are misguided,"
Kaelin said.
"Was Jonah Redford misguided?"
Majasilax asked.
"No, he was a pawn, a victim," Kaelin said. "That's how we feel about the other species in the Confederation," Majasilax said. "If you're not looking for another colony world, what will you do if the Zygins discover this place? What if, despite all your precautions, they find out where you are? You owe it to yourselves to look for another home. A better home than this place,"
Kaelin said.
"We shall persevere as we always have. Our fleets would defend this place and throw back any attack made by the Zygins,"
Hodak said.
"Are the other Boxins aware they can't stay here in the long term?"
Kaelin asked.
"Scientists are aware of the situation. Key members of the High Council and battle leaders are aware, Majasalak said. Why don't you appeal to the Confederation for help? Not all the different species can be subservient to the Zaijins. Aren't there other allies?
Kaelin asked.
We've tried in the past. The price for their help is always to grant access to the Star Shroud Network across a multitude of star systems. Primitive species would fall victim to the Zaijins, and we won't condemn those species to their mercy,
Majasalak said. Kaelin glanced at both of them. Zack was right. The Boxins had become a race of beings that was fixated on making tough decisions. They were so rigid that they wouldn't find a more suitable home world to live on. What was worse was that she didn't think she could convince them.
I realize this appears harsh, but we have a different perception of time than you do. For the foreseeable future, we will remain here, Hodak said.
Kaelin looked at Majasalak. She knew this was wrong. The Boxins had backed themselves into a corner and wouldn't do anything to get themselves out of it. Is this how a species like the Boxins eventually went extinct? They were alive, but Kaelin felt that something needed to change. Her mind kept returning to Sethion. She felt that it was the key to the Boxins' survival. She had to learn all she could about it, but she wouldn't get answers from Hodak or Majasalak, so she let the matter drop.
Chapter 7. In an area between the planets of the star system that was home to the humans, remnants of a Zaijin warship floated in space. Passive scans hadn't detected the minuscule amount of power still operating within the wrecked starship, and Mar-Arden had a difficult choice to make. They'd survived inside the mysterious barrier that was protecting this star system from their fleet, and they'd managed to remain undetected for many cycles. Their survival required all of their ingenuity, as well as the promise that what they would find on Earth would be worth something of great value to the Confederation. With the limited number of shuttles he had at his disposal, he'd made only a single foray to this star system's interior planets. The Boxins had left the humans their orbital defense platforms that were more than capable of detecting their attack shuttles if they'd suspected that the Zaijins were in the area. Secrecy was their primary weapon, especially with only a few attack shuttles and a converted section of the warship hull that functioned as a lifeboat for the surviving crew members. Mar-Arden waited in his chambers for Hohenberend and Condra Renee to arrive. Hohenberend had been much more amiable since Mar-Arden had put him in his place. Now the ship commander did his bidding without question, and rightfully so. It had been Mar-Arden's actions and quick thinking that had saved them from the rest of the Zaijin fleet's destruction. He still couldn't fathom how the barrier had been created, but he knew it had something to do with the Star Shroud. Standard Boxan protocol for observing a less advanced species would put their monitoring station on the furthest planet in the system, and it just so happened that this planet was more than half a system away from their current location. But it wouldn't have mattered to Mar-Arden if it had been much closer. He wouldn't risk going there. It was the ultimate sort of irony that after all this time fighting with the Boxins over their Star Shroud monitoring stations, they had finally found an intact one, and they weren't even going to investigate it. Mar-Arden had little doubt that the Boxins and humans were watching the monitoring station, and should his presence be detected there, the Boxan monitoring station would self-destruct. He'd seen the Boxins use such tactics before in other star systems. The door chimed, and Mar-Arden authorized it to open, revealing the squadron of loyal soldiers that stood outside his door at all times. They were in a survival situation, and he wouldn't chance another Zaijin trying to take his place if the opportunity arose. Only one other had tried, and Condra Renee had made short work of him. Hohenberend had also ensured that no one else made any such coup attempt. Mar-Arden had always found that fortune would favor those who were better prepared. Hohenberend and Condra Renee entered the room, the elder Zaijin coming in first as befit his rank. Mar-Arden invited them both to sit. Condra Renee had just returned from an important assignment.
My mission took longer than it otherwise would have if we'd had our sensor array intact, Condra Renee said.
I'm well aware of the limitations of the attack shuttle, Mar-Arden replied.
Condra Renee nodded.
I have an accurate model of the barrier. I didn't risk tampering with any of the shroud devices.
That's good. Because if you had, no doubt the Boxons would be sweeping the area now, looking for us,
Mar Arden said. Learning that there were still Boxons in this star system made their work here even more delicate than if they'd had to contend with the humans alone. It seemed that the Boxon battle leader in charge of the Dreadnought group had emptied their ships of non-essential personnel and sent them back to Earth. Mar Arden approved of the tactic. The Boxons would only sacrifice Dreadnoughts for the highest priority of species. He still didn't understand what made the humans so valuable to the Boxons, but that would come in time.
According to my analysis, the barrier doesn't encompass the entire star system, Condra Renee said.
Honbrand frowned.
There are gaps in the barrier? Perhaps we could signal the fleet through one of these gaps, he said.
Apologies, Commander. What I mean is that the barrier will cut off the ninth planet's orbit within the next 50 cycles,
Contra Renee said.
Mar Arden considered that for a moment. Interesting. The power requirements for maintaining the barrier must be extremely high. Otherwise, whoever realigned the star shroud would have accounted for the ninth planet's orbit.
I don't think they had time, Condra Renee said.
What do you mean? Mar Arden asked.
You already surmised that a new species is taking a hand in our war with the Boxons. There was the anomaly that was detected toward the end of the battle, and then the barrier went up. This is not a coincidence, and if the Boxons had this kind of power, why would they waste two dreadnoughts standing against our fleet?
Condra Renee said.
It could have taken them time to power their devices. It also could have taken them time to get the configuration uploaded through the Shroud Network,
Honbrand said.
Those are possibilities,
Condra Renee acknowledged. Mar Arden was impressed with his student. She could present her thoughts and still recognize that there were other possibilities.
I agree with you, Mar Arden said to Condra Renee.
The Zaijin perked up at the compliment, and her tail flicked in the air behind her. But she immediately got her emotions under control and brought her tail to rest.
I've managed to identify asteroids that have a significant amount of ice on them,
Condra Renee said.
Excellent, Honbrand said. I'll let our salvage crews know.
It was always a matter of resources. Their stock of provisions would sustain them, but a warship's design called for liquid water to be stored in the aft section of the ship, and that happened to be the part of the ship that had been sheared in half when they'd raced through the barrier as it was forming.
We need to decide what our next move is, Honbrand said.
Both Zaijins waited for Mar Arden to speak.
Why do you think the Boxons are so invested in the humans?
Mar Arden said.
They tried to recruit the Nurshals against us because they could resist our compulsion. Perhaps it's something similar, Honbrand said. The Boxons have ever been trying to nullify that particular vulnerability. But we have conflicting reports on whether the humans are vulnerable to compulsion,
Mar Arden said. His gaze drifted toward Condra Renee. The Zaijin sucked in a harsh breath.
I failed to use compulsion on the human, Zack Quick. He was able to resist me on multiple occasions. He could sense what I was doing and was able to deny me,
Condra Renee said.
And yet Scion Schiff was able to successfully control one of the other Athena crew members,
Honbrand said. Mar Arden pressed his thin lips together.
I don't believe that one human resisting your compulsion calls your skills into question. It could simply be that some humans are vulnerable while others aren't. It's something I look forward to learning more about,
Mar Arden said. Honbrand frowned.
So you mean to go further into the system, then?
He asked.
Of course. Getting to Earth was always the plan, but I'm reluctant to leave any Zaijins behind,
Mar Arden said.
Mercy?
Honbrand said, with a hint of disbelief in his voice. Mar Arden shook his head.
Necessity. Carrying out my plans once we reach Earth requires a certain number of us, and attack shuttles don't have the capacity to bring all of us there. Then how do you propose we get to Earth? Or even within the vicinity of the human home planet?
Honbrand said. Mar Arden drew in a deep breath.
What we really need is a way to move within this system without being detected. As low as we are, we would only make it to the field where a failed planet never formed. And even that carries some risk, as we've detected some human activity in the asteroid field.
Most likely mining activities, Holmbrand said.
Agreed. Surveyor probes and such, Marardin said. There were a few moments of silence before Conjurenee cleared her throat.
We need to test their reactions, probe their defenses. Nothing that would give us away, but enough to get their attention, Conjurenee said.
Marardin let out a satisfied smile.
I concur.
Honbrend frowned.
There's a lot of risk for this effort.
We'll need contingency plans should we be discovered, Marardin said, and noted Honbrend's surprised expression.
Earlier, I said I was reluctant to lose resources if I don't need to. I didn't say I would risk losing my chance at Earth for the sake of all the Zaijins we have with us.
Understood. I'll make some preliminary lists for you to approve, Honbrend said.
Marardin looked at Conjurenee. I'll expect you to come up with a plan for getting the Boxen's attention.
Conjurenee frowned.
Just the Boxen's? Not the humans? She asked.
We don't know how many Boxen's made it back to Earth, but let's assume it was a few hundred. They'll be occupied with getting Earth ready to defend itself from attack, Marardin said.
Honbrend tapped his fingers on the table.
So, a few hundred Boxen's, some technical resources, and a species that can barely travel through their own star system. And you believe they're focused on defending themselves from attack?
Marardin nodded.
Yes. And it's thanks to Gar Mantis. Our illustrious supreme leader insisted that we send large asteroids through a wormhole towards Earth.
His intention was to arrive at Earth in time to prevent the massive asteroid from destroying the planet and make the humans believe the Boxen's were somehow responsible, Honbrend said.
Not the best plan Garmantis could have enacted. The humans were able to stop the asteroid and have no doubt surmised the vast resources in terms of materials it contains, more than enough for them to start building their own fleet. Couple that with a few hundred Boxen's with the technical know-how to give the humans a head start, and this could go very badly for us, Marardin said.
Honbrend shifted uncomfortably in his seat.
The Boxen's wouldn't have a choice but to abandon their long-held principles about sharing advanced technology with a more primitive species.
Yes, Garmantis practically threw them together, Marardin said.
There was no way Garmantis could have anticipated something like the barrier around the star system, Honbrend said.
Marardin shrugged. He was seeing how far he could push the warship commander about their supreme leader before he'd push back.
I can't see the Boxen's committing such resources to the humans because some of them can resist our compulsion ability. They already have the Nurshals, or at least the Nurshals were still fighting a civil war regarding which side to take.
Conjurenee's eyes flashed.
The Mardoxian potential. It has to be.
It's the only reason I could think of as well, but I was curious to see which of you would bring it up first, Marardin said.
We'll need to confirm it, and that won't be easy, Honbrend said.
After we get to Earth. But think about it. We could finally find the genetic link that gives the Boxen's the advantage they've used for hundreds of years. Once we confirm the Mardoxian potential in humans, we can then work toward implementing it into our own species. And that will take test subjects, Marardin said.
Honbrend let out a hungry growl of assent, and even Conjurenee was intrigued. Marardin found that the proper motivation was the best way to get the most out of his resources, and now that they were properly motivated, it was time to move forward with the next step in his plan. Chapter 8. Ed Johnson glanced at his ECF visitor's badge, which showed a picture of him beside a prominent blue stripe. The clipped cadence of Iris Barrett in her Louboutin heels sounded next to him, comprising his entire protective detail at the ECF branch headquarters. At 5'11", she had more advanced implants and enhancements to strength, speed, and vision than most military drones used for reconnaissance. Iris was an army of one.
General William Sheridan no longer operated from NORAD, but had taken over a state-of-the-art facility within 100 miles from the Cheyenne Mountain Complex. Ed and Iris waited for the remaining two members of their party to go through the security checkpoint. Alicia Murphy was a thick-set woman who was barely 5 feet tall. Her brown, curly hair hugged her round face, and her thick glasses were part of her disguise. Walking past her in public, no one would give her a second glance. Her gray business suit and pale pink shirt allowed her to blend in with either a crowd at a shopping mall or a corporate office. Blake Allen was the last one through. He was only a few inches taller than Alicia and had a small belly pressing up against the belt of his pants. Add a thinning head of hair above a black necktie, and most people wouldn't notice him any more than Alicia. No one would guess they were both exceptional viewers who were highly respected in the Dux Corp upper echelons. Blake and Alicia were here to join the ECF. They had no family ties and were dedicated to doing their part to help protect the Earth. They were escorted farther inside the buildings where Ed saw Sheridan speaking with a Boxen soldier. When the Boxens had first arrived, they'd rarely come planetside, but now that things were getting up and running on the new moon and lunar base, groups of Boxens had been making regular trips down to various ECF complexes across the globe. Their escort asked them to wait while he notified Sheridan they were here, and after a few moments, the lead general of the ECF waved them over. Ed led the way and shook hands with Sheridan. General Sheridan gestured toward the Boxen soldier.
"I'm not sure you've met in person, but this is Skranix, strike commander for the Boxan military."
Ed gave a slight bow to the Boxen.
"Michael Hunsicker speaks highly of you. A pleasure to make your acquaintance," Skranix said.
The Boxen's great size and deep voice took Ed a moment to register. It was one thing to know there was a being that was 10 foot tall, but it was quite another to have it standing in front of you. Ed introduced Iris, Alicia, and Blake. Skranix bowed to Alicia and Blake.
"It is an honor to meet those who have the Mardoxian potential," he said.
"Welcome to the Earth Coalition Force, and thank you for joining us," Sheridan said to Alicia and Blake, then shifted his gaze toward Ed. "We need to talk about testing centers for ECF recruitment. We know Russia had their own remote viewer program that was part of the old KGB.
Ed nodded. "I'm aware of the program. Wasn't anywhere near as effective as ours.
You and I both know that if we add anything regarding telepathic abilities to the ECF recruitment bulletin, we'll get nut job applicants instead of quality applicants," Sheridan said.
"That's why we didn't use those terms as part of the recruitment process," Ed said.
"Yeah, but we need a way to attract people who may have this ability," Sheridan said and looked at Skranix. "How do you find members of your race who have the Mardoxian potential?"
"Having the Mardoxian potential is among the highest honors for Boxens. There are no pretenders, but without Thessulia, we have no one here who could aid in validating the claim," Skranix said.
Ed drew in a deep breath. They'd learned that Thessulia was a Mardoxian priestess who had stayed with Praxpedax to help fight against the Zygen fleet.
"Their sacrifice will not be in vain, I promise you," Ed said, and turned toward Sheridan. "Alicia and Blake can help with testing potential recruits, but you don't need to start from scratch. We have lists of potential candidates you can choose from."
Sheridan frowned.
"Do I even want to know where this list comes from?" he asked.
"It's not what you think. Most countries have a form of standardized testing for children throughout their school career from the elementary level all the way through college entrance exams," Ed said.
"Telepathic abilities can present themselves in a number of different ways," Alicia said.
"How?"
Sheridan asked.
"Intuition, for one. Being able to read into a situation and still achieve your objective. These are things that are emphasized in basic training found anywhere from militaries to law enforcement agencies around the globe," Alicia said.
"We target the people who stand out to determine whether they'd be ideal candidates," Ed said.
"What makes an ideal candidate?" Sheridan asked.
"There are some who are open to the possibility of certain telepathic capabilities, but then there are others who don't cope with it very well," Ed said.
"Where does Kalen Farrow figure into all this, then?" Sheridan asked.
Skranix cleared his throat.
The Athena commander is known to us. A highly revered Mardoxian priestess has validated the claim of her skills.
Michael Hunsicker's reports from the first leg of the Athena mission to Pluto categorized Kalen's abilities as repeatedly demonstrative. When they first arrived at the Boxan monitoring station, it was as if Kalen had already been there. I'm willing to wager that Kalen's abilities have only become more refined during her time with the Boxans,
Ed said. Blake raised his hand, indicating he had something to add.
We've seen these reports, and they're nothing short of amazing. Kalen Farrow was able to remote view to a place millions of miles away, and their mission update also describes how she used her ability to help locate the Athena crew member held captive by the Zaijin.
Sheridan nodded.
What I'd like to know is whether Kalen's the exception or if she's the standard we can expect others to be able to achieve.
Right now, she's the exception, Ed said. Even the Boxans have indicated that telepathic capabilities among the Mardoxian sect vary.
My understanding is that they put their Mardoxian priests on the bridge of their ships, and the captains will defer to them as part of their strategy in battle, Sheridan said.
That is correct, Skrenik said. There is no challenge to authority, but a battle commander would be remiss if they were to ignore a recommendation made by anyone from the Mardoxian sect.
Sheridan frowned.
I acknowledge that you have a system in place that works for you. We'll build our own fleet, but I'm not sure how this will fit within our command structure.
They'll need to prove their worth, Ed said.
We wouldn't advocate that you adopt our model for commanding your fleets, but the Mardoxian potential is something that can help your species realize its full potential, and it will be something the Zaijins will try to take from you, Skrenik said.
Ed had seen that whenever a Boxan referred to the Zaijins, there came with it the deep loathing of one's enemies. Soldiers returning from war often demonstrated this form of hatred that had enabled them to do what they'd had to do to survive. For all intents and purposes, the Boxans had had to become a militaristic society in order to survive. Ed understood the necessity of it, and at the same time hoped that Earth's fate wouldn't require the same price for survival. Chapter 9. As the head liaison between humans and Boxans, Michael Hunsicker was also on point for General William Sheridan's visits to the lunar base, and Michael knew it was just a matter of time before the head of the Earth Coalition Force ventured on site. On the lunar base, they had no formal ECF uniform other than the jumpsuits they wore for their everyday duties. The official ECF uniform was dark blue with a Phoenix emblem patch on the side. Since Michael was no longer a member of NASA and was officially part of the ECF, his old military rank of Air Force Colonel had carried over. But he wasn't sure what ranking structure the ECF would settle on because once they had a fleet, there was talk of them following the U.S. Naval Command hierarchy. There were no colonels in the Navy. Ultimately, Michael didn't care. He had a job to do, and whatever rank the ECF brass saw fit to give him would be okay with him. He'd been an Air Force colonel and, later on, a mission commander for two of NASA's most historic missions, one to Mars and the second to Pluto. ECF staff lined up along the corridor for Sheridan's visit, and Base Commander Alyssa Archer stood at Michael's side.
"Stand up straight. The boss is coming," Alyssa whispered.
Michael snorted. Those in the military snapped a salute as the four-star general came through the airlock doors and entered the ECF wing of the lunar base. Two of his armed escorts walked ahead of him. Sheridan swung his mighty gaze at Michael Hunsicker and walked directly over to him.
"I feel like I should salute you," Sheridan said and stuck out his hand.
Michael shook the general's hand.
"It's nice to finally meet you, General," he said.
"I should have come here much sooner. As it is, we hitched a ride with Skrenix," Sheridan said.
Michael nodded.
"If you'll follow Alyssa and me, we'll be the ones showing you around."
Sheridan shook Alyssa's hand as well. The rest of the ECF staff was dismissed, and Michael proceeded to show the general around. He'd been in numerous meetings with him, but this was the first time they'd met face-to-face. By the time they got to the main conference room, Colonel Matthews had caught up with them.
"Apologies, General. I was at the new moon making sure the engineers from Array Corporation were situated and working on getting the mechs online," Kyle said.
"Understood. And I approved their transfer last week. They'll be here for as long as you need them," Sheridan said.
Chazen and Skranix joined them in the main conference room where they sat on reinforced benches designed to take the weight of a boxen, who could weigh nearly 1,000 pounds, and more than that when they wore their powered armor.
"Thank you all for coming," Sheridan said. "All of you here, along with the rest of the people in your departments, are our boots on the ground. We're getting to the point where we've amassed materials sufficient enough to ramp up our shipbuilding capabilities. We're all part of the ECF, and we'll only continue to grow with the best people our planet has to offer. Futurists would say that an organization such as ours has the potential to outlast the countries from which it began. It sounds nice, and hopefully, hundreds of years from now, the people will look back at what we've started and acknowledge what will be done here. There are some who think we'll fail, that the Earth Coalition Force will not succeed. Humans have never come together as a whole, but there are people from around the world here, and there will be more now that China and Russia have officially joined the ECF and will be contributing resources to us. We all need to learn to work together, and our efforts here and now will have long-lasting effects far beyond what will happen once we leave here. We're the line that stands between the Zygins and the people of Earth. Perhaps in the future, there will be another species that will threaten our lives," Sheridan said, glancing at the Boxens. "I hope not, but the ECF will be the ones to defend our planet and our right to exist in the galaxy."
Michael glanced around at those gathered in the large assembly area. Most sat a little straighter, and even Chazen and Skranix were caught up in Sheridan's speech. The Boxens stood up and brought their fists to their chests.
"Battle leader," Skranix
said, addressing General Sheridan with a title reserved for the most eminent leader in the Boxan military. For a Boxen, it was the highest form of praise.
"Colonel Matthews, show us what you've got," Sheridan said.
Kyle Matthews stood up and engaged the holoprojector. Three-dimensional images of 6 starship designs came into view.
"The ships you see before you are of Boxan design, but aren't the dreadnoughts we saw when the Boxans first arrived. Those ships are beyond our current capabilities, so we propose that our approach to starship building will be to start small," Kyle said, and took control of the holo interface.
He swiped the ships to the side, and a smaller, 2-person craft came into prominence.
"This is a strike fighter. We plan to merge the Boxan strike fighter with our own advanced military space vehicles. Actual production of these ships has already begun. Strike fighter training programs have begun at places like Sacramento Bay and RAF Cranwell in the United Kingdom. We even have a few simulators here. Cadets who go through the training on the ground will finish their training up here. Some of you may be wondering why we would start with such a small attack spacecraft, but one thing history has taught us is to start small and build from there. This will hold true even with the help from the Boxens, although with their help we'll be able to develop much faster than we normally would have. Strike fighter squadrons are something we can do quickly, setting up fighter bases here and on the new moon. We'll eventually put them elsewhere as well, such as on carriers that we'll build. Again, we'll start small and take our cues from established practices throughout history, but this time it will come from our navies. Although some ship designs may need to be merged, the ships we build will serve our first and ultimate goal, which is to defend the Earth from the threat of invasion. Destroyer-class vessels will be first, then cruisers, and eventually battleship carriers. Those will be our ships of the line. Eventually, we'll get to the big behemoths the Boxens have built, but we can't just start building ships indiscriminately. Our ships must be built to stand against Zygin warships and tactics. There will be some things we'll need to start over, acknowledging our weaknesses and making them our strengths. We're new to space warfare, and one of the things we need from you is your ideas. The Boxens and Zygins have been fighting for a long time. Perhaps there's something we can offer that the Boxens haven't considered."
Michael listened as various ECF members put forth their ideas. The Boxens had already been sharing all they knew about the Zygins and their arsenal. More than once, Michael had found himself thinking about Praxpedax and his foresight to send as many Boxens back to Earth as he could. After the meeting, Michael was reviewing his messages and saw an alert about several drones tasked with monitoring the barrier having gone offline. They were running diagnostics on the system, and the nearest drone would be sent to investigate.
Chapter 10.
Over the past few days, Kaelin had dedicated her time to learning what she could about Sethion, the Boxan homeworld. Finding the coordinates to the planet had been relatively easy, but with them came a warning that the planet and star system itself was under quarantine. Any attempt to go to Sethion without proper authorization would result in that ship being treated as a hostile force. Not only would the automated defensive platforms throughout the system destroy anyone trying to enter the system, but also anyone trying to leave. Learning that bit of news had shaken her and left her restless ever since. The Boxans had found themselves in the midst of a civil war that had spawned during what they called the Zygen Uprising, which led to the Chaos Wars. Hordes of Boxans had fled Sethion, but when Boxans under the Zygen influence attempted to learn of Alaron's location, the High Council had to act. In order to preserve the lives of the remaining free members of their society, they'd had to cut all ties from Sethion. The Boxans had successfully ousted the Zygens from Sethion's star system, but the damage had already been done. Once a Boxan was under Zygen influence, there was no way to reverse it. There'd been a number of scientists who had tried, and all had failed. The High Council had forbidden anyone else from returning to Sethion, and condemned any Boxan left behind to a life filled with terror, loss, and brutality. Kaelin had seen the vids, and until then it had been hard to imagine what the wide-scale impact of a Boxan war would have on a planet. Large portions of the planet had been destroyed, and such madness and savagery had spread that Kaelin wasn't sure how anyone could survive. The images in the vids haunted her and wouldn't abate no matter what she did. She knew there were Boxans still fighting for their lives back on Sethion, and her visions of them weren't just dreams. She knew she should focus on trying to get back to Earth, but she couldn't let her intuition about Sethion go. Intuition and foresight were what the Boxans revered most about Mardoxian sect members, and her gut instinct was telling her that there was still hope for Sethion. Kaelin decided to start asking different Boxans about Sethion and whether they thought there was any hope for those left behind, but hardly any Boxan was willing to speak to her about it. Even Garrok, who had helped them in the past, refused to consider it. Earlier that day, she'd gone to speak to Clatomor about it, and even he told her that Sethion was dead. What she needed was proof. More than growing her abilities, she needed to find evidence that there were still Boxans unaffected by the Zygen influence there. Sethion may be lost, but the Boxans who had been left behind required a miracle, and if the Boxans here refused to answer the call, she'd have to go it alone while trying to convince anyone she could to help her. Kaelin had arranged for Zack to meet her at one of the garden paths outside the city. What forests there were on Alaron were short and sparse, as if they were near the ocean shore. The roots weren't able to grow very deep, and the nutrients in the soil weren't abundant. The Boxans had done what they could during their time here to create gardens that they cared for, but the plants that were native to this planet didn't vary all that much and were mostly brown or tan to match the dry landscape. Where the Boxans had brought irrigation, the plants thrived, but only to a certain point, and the gardens were pale shades of greens. Kaelin's PDA buzzed on her wrist, signaling that Zack was getting close, and she heard the sound of a small craft approach and land nearby. Zack was spending most of his time on the Athena, but would occasionally return to the surface to be with the others. He climbed out of the cockpit of a Boxan transport vehicle, a small gray craft that was used for training young Boxans and was readily usable by the crew of the Athena. They couldn't leave the atmosphere, but were perfect for traveling short distances. She was glad Zack shared her love of flying. She'd prefer to race around in a strike fighter, but her time had been limited. Zack waved over to her and glanced around to see if anyone else was around, raising his brows in exaggerated mock surprise. "Are we all alone out here?" he asked. Kaelin smiled.
"I thought it might be a refreshing change of pace."
Zack came over to give her a quick kiss and then took her hand as they walked down the garden path. They chewed the time away, talking about different things.
"I still haven't been able to get any shroud devices to test with," Zack said.
"What are you trying to do?"
"I want to recreate the barrier, but on a much smaller scale. The issue we're having is that the barrier is preventing us from disabling it from the outside," Zack said.
"So you think if you send the proper sequence to turn it off from inside the barrier, it would work?"
Kaelin asked.
"That's the theory," Zack said.
"What if it didn't work? Whoever was inside the barrier would be trapped," Kaelin said.
Well, gee, I didn't think of that, he said with a grin. I wasn't going to be the one inside, and no one else for that matter. I'd put a transmitter inside that would send out the shutdown signal after a period of time. If it didn't work, then we'd know. I'm sure we could limit the power available to the shroud devices so they'd cease to function after a while, Zack said.
Sounds like a good experiment. So what's the problem?
Zack blew out a breath. The problem is they don't have any shroud devices here. I don't need the actual thing. I could scale the model down, so I've been looking at building my own.
Couldn't Garak help with that?
Kaelin asked. He is. We're trying to gather materials, but it's proving to be more trouble than I thought. Materials are scarce, so while Garak is looking into that, I've been searching through the Athena's new drawer reference library for any clue about how to build them. The problem is that the drawers didn't call it a shroud device, Zack said.
Kaelin nodded, finally understanding. The drawers had their own way of naming things. The Boxens had been able to help with some translating and conceptual understanding of what was being described, but it was a slow process.
I need your help, Kaelin said.
With what?
I'm trying to get information about Sethion, Kaelin said.
Zack frowned.
What kind of information?
I need to know if there's been any recent activity on the planet that would indicate there are Boxens still alive there,
Kaelin said.
Zack's brows shot up his forehead. You told me the other day about the quarantine zone and that no ship could get through. Sounds like a suicidal request.
Kaelin looked away.
That was the other thing I wanted to talk to you about.
Zack shook his head. No, he said, taking a few steps away from her where he stopped and shook his head again.
Kaelin followed. Come on, Zack. I know you can do this, she said.
Kaelin, I promised them I wouldn't go poking around their systems while we were here. We're their guests. I may think the Boxens are a bit harsh at times, but we wouldn't be here if it weren't for them, Zack said, and held up his hand. And I mean that in a good way.
What if there are still Boxens there who need help?
Kaelin asked. I'm trying to figure out a way to get us home. Why do we have to solve the Boxens' problems for them?
Kaelin drew in a deep, steadying breath and lowered her voice. They'd both been speaking too loud.
Because no one else will. The Boxens have washed their hands of it,
Kaelin said. Yeah, and that should tell you something. It's like they suddenly decided, oh well, the rest of you stuck on the planet are screwed. Bye-bye, see you later, Zack said, and continued to walk down the path.
I know there are Boxens there,
Kaelin said, and Zack stopped in his tracks.
One's unaffected by the Zygian influence.
How could you possibly know this? Zack asked.
Kaelin closed the distance between them.
I've seen it. Those visions Majasalax believes are dreams are real.
Zack frowned. Let me get this straight. You think this recurring dream or vision thing is you seeing actual events as they're unfolding?
Yes,
Kaelin said.
And what do the other Mardoxian priests think of this? Zack asked.
I've only told Majasalax, but I did bring Sethion up to the others and they won't even consider anything that has to do with going back there,
Kaelin said.
Just bear with me a second, Zack said. I can't begin to explain how you can do the things you do, like how you found me when I was a prisoner or even how you knew I was alive. But we were in the same star system and you had an idea of where to look. I thought you needed a precise location to remote view your way there.
That's part of it, but this is different. I've been training with the Boxens for a while now, and my abilities are growing stronger. Majasalax told me that the most gifted of the Mardoxian sect are brilliant strategists who are able to see events beyond what they appear to be. It's how I knew to disconnect the gravity tether in the wormhole while we were trying to find the Drar space station. I think my time here learning all that I've learned has enabled me to pick up on certain things. Things the Boxens are ignoring. It's these things that are allowing me to focus on Sethion. I don't know how else to explain it. The visions are so intense. I can smell the air and hear the Boxens fighting,
Kaelin said.
Who are they fighting? Zack asked.
Kaelin swallowed hard.
Each other. But each vision I have centers around one particular Boxen wearing old, traditional armor. It reminds me of when I first used the Mardoxian chamber and met Majasalax, she said.
Zack regarded her for a few moments, considering.
Why don't you use one of the Mardoxian chambers and go take a look? He asked.
It's not that easy. For one, they keep the chambers on lockdown, so there's that to contend with. And if I told them what I want to do, I don't think they'd allow it,
Kaelin said.
Zack pressed his lips together.
I don't know, he said.
Kaelin flinched.
I'm surprised. I thought you of all people would help me with this.
It's not that. I'm trying to be compliant with their conditions for allowing us to stay here. I'm doing it for you, Zack said.
Kaelin looked away from him. She knew he wasn't just being stubborn, but why did he have to become respectful of Boxen wishes now? At one time, he would have relished the challenge, but he was more mature now. She liked it, but if Zack wouldn't help her, how was she going to find out what was happening on Sethion?
Look, Zack said, let me think about it for a while. Weigh out the pros and cons.
Kaelin took his hand in hers.
Thank you,
she said. It was something at least.
Chapter 11. The day after Kaelin asked Zack for his help with extracting key bits of information about Sethion, he decided he would look into it. For a while now, the Boxens had been trying to probe the Athena's computer systems. The first time it occurred, the Athena's AI had alerted him immediately. The fascinating part was that they'd been unsuccessful. He instructed the AI to keep a close watch on their attempts and log the activity. He'd known the Athena's computing systems forwards and backwards before going to the Drar space station, and the Boxens should have been able to gain access with ease. However, the Drars had remade the Athena, including the computer systems, and that was the reason the Boxens were having so many problems trying to gain access. He'd thought of accusing the Boxens directly of what they were doing, but had decided not to. One of the many things he'd learned from hacking his way into corporate networks or securing his own network was that it was far more revealing to watch the attacker attempt to gain access, seeing what tools they had in their arsenal and what methods they used. Sometimes, he learned something. The Boxen's first attempts to gain access to the Athena's systems had been almost delicate, but as they were continually thwarted, their attempts had become more aggressive. Their recent request to take the ship apart to see how it worked was the latest effort at trying to gain access to the Drar knowledge that was wrapped up in the Athena, and it was one of the reasons Zack had decided to stay aboard the ship. Well, that and the fact that he wanted to figure out a way to get home, a way that wouldn't leave Earth vulnerable to Zygin attack. The crew of the Athena was united on that front. No one would think of jeopardizing Earth in their attempts to get home. He hadn't told the others about the Boxen's attempt to gain access to the Athena. He was handling it, and they were focused on learning what they could from the Boxen's. Zack knew Kaelin was upset that he hadn't immediately committed himself to helping her with this, but he had needed to give it some thought. If he did this and they got caught, it could mean the end of their alliance with the Boxen's. His intentions might be honorable, but his actions could be considered treasonous. What would they do if the Boxen's kicked them off Alaron? Clattamore would help them get home no matter what the High Council decided, but Zack would rather not put anyone in an awkward position. On the other hand, Kaelin truly believed she was seeing events that were unfolding on the Boxan homeworld, and that, if nothing else, was enough for Zack to at least do some poking around. Zack headed for the training camp where Itanu would be. While the Nurshal soldier wasn't one for espionage or intrigue, he was someone Zack felt could be somewhat objective about the Boxens. He opened a comms channel and sent the Nurshal his location, and after a few minutes, Itanu was flying overhead. His four translucent wings could propel him at great speeds, but they could also enable the Nurshal to do some pretty precise flying. Itanu raced toward him as if he were initiating a game of chicken. Zack stood his ground, and Itanu's deep orange eyes narrowed. Zack knew Itanu wouldn't fly into him, but he was coming in so fast that Zack took a step back and heard the Nurshal howl in triumph.
"Well, it was either that or let you fly into me," Zack said.
Itanu landed next to him.
"You're a rare sight on the ground these days," he said.
"I missed you," Zack said.
Itanu frowned.
"You weren't even close to hitting me. What would you have hit me with? You're unarmed."
Zack shook his head.
"I mean that we hadn't spoken for a while and I desired to be in your presence," he said.
Itanu laughed.
"I knew what you meant. I was... what is the term Hicks used? Oh yes, I was just pulling your leg."
"Dale Hicks,"
The gift that just keeps on giving, Zack said. Itanu frowned.
I'm not familiar with this expression. I thought you and Hicks were friends.
Zack smiled. Oh, we are. We have a mutual understanding and history of playing jokes on one another. I once changed the passphrase for getting out of the Athena's airlock to, Zack is my superior in every way.
What did Hicks do when he found you?
Itanu asked. He told me he'd get me back for that and to take off the passphrase, Zack said. Sometimes he just had to entertain himself.
What is it you wanted to talk to me about?
Itanu asked. I need to know your thoughts on the Boxons, Zack said.
They are a very wise race of beings worthy of our respect, Itanu said.
Has your opinion about them changed since you've been here? Zack asked. Itanu shook his head.
No. Why are you asking me these questions?
Zack scratched the back of his head. There's no easy way to say this, so I'm just going to go ahead and do it. Kaelin believes there are Boxons still on Cetheon who need help. Itanu's gaze hardened. The code of honor for the Nurshals was a solemn thing. To a fellow Nurshal, loyalty was almost instinctual.
Has she spoken to anyone about this?
Yes, and it's like they won't even consider the possibility, Zack said.
But Kaelin has the Mardoxian potential. Surely her word would carry a great deal of weight, Itanu said.
You'd think that, but no one is listening to her, Zack said.
So why exactly are you asking me about the Boxons?
Itanu said. Zack looked away for a moment to check that no one else was near them. She asked me to dig up some information about Cetheon to see if the Boxons have had any recent contact with them. Itanu glanced over at him in alarm.
Please tell me you haven't done this.
Zack shook his head. I haven't done anything yet. You're the first person I've talked to about it. But I will say this. Kaelin is convinced there are Boxons still alive there. She knew I was alive when everyone else thought I was dead. And, well, we owe her, he said.
We?
Itanu asked. Yes, we. Kaelin was the one who contacted Udon Zari and gave him our location on Celebes, Zack said. Itanu nodded, remembering their time being held prisoners to the Zaijins.
So what do you intend to do?
I intend to do what she asked me to do and see what there is to learn about Cetheon, Zack said.
What do you need from me?
Someone to watch my back would be nice, Zack said. Itanu made a show of craning his long neck so he could see behind Zack. What are you doing? Zack asked.
I was watching your back, Itanu said.
Zack shook his head. I hope you're joking around again.
I think we should talk to Garrok about this, Itanu said.
Zack nodded. Of anyone, Garrok would be the most likely to help them. Do you know where he is? Zack asked.
Yes. He's right over there inside the building, Itanu said.
They walked over, and Zack's internal heads-up display translated the symbols to words he could understand. Garrok had been in a supply building, but the Boxon scientist was leaving as they approached.
I was just looking for materials to build the shroud device prototypes you wanted, Garrok said.
Oh, thanks. Find anything? Zack asked.
No, unfortunately not. Whenever I try to requisition anything, the reason for the denial is always the same. Earth isn't in any immediate danger, so the materials required are reallocated to other things. Shipbuilding, most likely, Garrok said.
Did they say when they'd be able to get us something to use? Zack asked. Garrok shook his head. Understood. We have some questions for you, if you don't mind, Zack said. Itanu glanced at him.
You have questions for him. I'm just here to watch your back.
Zack rolled his eyes. Thanks. Garrok frowned.
What is it you'd like to know?
The star shrouds that are still surrounding the star systems. Have you had any contact with them? Zack asked.
No, but with Praxpadax's last communications and learning that there are Boxons trapped in those systems, the High Council is putting resources into checking them, Garrok said.
Good. That's really good to hear. Do you guys monitor for signals for known star systems? Zack asked. Garrok eyed him suspiciously.
You already know we do. What is it you want to know?
Zack blew out a breath and rubbed the back of his neck. I want to know about Cetheon and whether there have been any new signals detected from there. Garrok's large flaxen eyes widened.
Cetheon? First Kalen, and now you? Did she put you up to this?
He asked. No. Yes. Can you just answer the question? Zack said. Garrock grumbled and stomped away from them.
She's not going to give up on this, Zack said.
Garrock stopped and turned to face him.
Neither am I, Zack said.
Garrock drew himself up, and Zack was reminded once again of how tall the Boxons were. Garrock, at 8 feet, was considered short by Boxon standards, but he still made an imposing figure.
You shouldn't be asking about Sethion, Garrock growled.
What if she's right and there are Boxons still there? Don't you want to go back and check it out?
Zack asked. Etanu placed a hand on Zack's arm and squeezed.
If you persist in this, poking your nose where it doesn't belong, you'll be dealt with severely. Sethion is gone, and we don't need you dredging it up for us. We know who we left behind. They're all gone. The only Boxons that remain are those under the Zygin influence. If there were signals, we'd be checking into it, Garrock said.
With that, the Boxon turned on his heel and walked away.
Let him go, Etanu said.
See? They immediately shut down at the mere mention of Sethion, Zack said.
With good reason. Sethion represents a great shame for the Boxons, Etanu said.
No, the real shame is if there are Boxons there who need help and their own species is turning their back on them.
I'm sorry, Etanu. I know there's a significant risk with the Zygin influence, but that's not a good enough reason to condemn anyone to death, Zack said.
So what do you want to do? Etanu asked.
Boxons monitor everything. They've spent hundreds of years leaving their little monitoring stations all over the galaxy. You honestly think they're not monitoring Sethion? I want to know if there have been any recent signals from whatever they have monitoring that star system, Zack said.
The system is under quarantine, Etanu said.
Yeah, but they're likely still monitoring it. They'd want to know if anyone was trying to go there or was trying to leave. It's worth checking into, Zack said.
Even if it means incurring the wrath of the Boxons? Etanu asked.
Zack sighed. Let's hope it doesn't come to that. We may not learn anything at all.
You don't believe that. Not if Kalen is having visions, Etanu said.
You're right. I don't believe it. I think we're going to find something, and if that makes the Boxons uncomfortable, then so be it. This is their mess, Zack said. Etanu looked away and seemed to scan the area.
Where to next? The Nershal asked.
Zack smiled. He'd known he could count on Etanu for help. Chapter 12 Zack stood by one of the open info terminals that were placed in most of the common areas of the buildings he'd been in. He brought up the access interface and glanced over his shoulder in consternation. Etanu gave him the thumbs up, a gesture Zack had taught him to let him know he was clear to proceed. The amber-colored holoscreen came up, and Zack began searching for the comms control systems based on the current connections to the info terminal. The list came up on the screen, and he noted that the one he'd been searching for was present. He and Etanu had been to a few other buildings, so Zack could validate the protocol connection hierarchy. All his time spent working with Boxan's systems was being put to use, but it wasn't a whole lot different than computer systems back on Earth. All networks and systems needed a way to talk to one another, and the method they used came under the protocols established for that system. Once you learned the different protocols, you could then disseminate the signal to look for something hidden. Of course, knowing the protocol he was looking for was only one part of what he needed, but it was an important step that led to the next, which was finding a way to authenticate that wouldn't leave a digital trail right back to him. If Zack used his own credentials, he might as well run naked through the Boxan High Council chambers while waving his arms and yelling that he was looking for information on Sethion, the thought of which didn't appeal to him. He needed to get in and out without anyone the wiser. A message appeared on his internal heads-up display. I could run the analysis for you and attempt to gain access, Athena's AI said. Zack focused in order to send a text reply without speaking the words. Thanks. I appreciate it, but I don't want you involved. I don't want to give the Boxons an excuse to trace what I'm doing back to you.